Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Small Steps for Better Health. We are on episode number 12 today. My name is Jeannie Alice Bruce. I'm a social media specialist in the marketing department. And Small Steps for Better Health is a podcast series where we have North Mississippi Health Services experts coming in and talking to us about ways that we can improve our health, small actionable steps that we can take to increase our health and longevity. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Will Edmondson. Dr. Edmondson, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely.
I appreciate your time. Would you introduce yourself?
Yes, Jeannie Alice, thank you very much for having me today. My name is Will Edmondson. I trained in sleep medicine and pulmonary and critical care, board certified in all three, and I've been practicing sleep medicine for about 20 years now here in Tupelo.
Great. So here in Tupelo, you've been here for 20 years.
Correct.
That's great. So we're talking about healthy sleep today and some ways we can improve our sleep. But let's start by talk to us about why healthy sleep is important.
Well, first thing is people always wonder why they're tired or sleepy during the daytime. And mm-hmm. one of the biggest reasons that we are sleepy is we don't take care of our sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get enough sleep or we're not getting good quality sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't realize that most adults are going to need at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night.
Mm-hmm.
That's typically uninterrupted sleep if possible. When you're talking teenagers, they actually will need 8 to 10 hours of sleep.
Okay.
When you go into the kid range, elementary school, those kids are going to need 10 hours of sleep. So when you don't get enough sleep, you build up a sleep debt.
Mm-hmm.
And over a period of time, you have to pay back that debt one way or another. And sometimes that's on the weekends. People try to sleep late. If you don't pay that debt back, you do have problems associated with it. And that's mainly fatigue and tiredness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we also can see depression. You can see people have exacerbations of mental illness issues. You can see increased incidence of car accidents and mm-hmm. accidents at work. So it can be very important for us to get an adequate amount of sleep every night.
Sure. And so when we talk about adults and the amount of sleep that we need, does that mean being in the bed that amount of time, or do we need to try to be in the bed for, you know, 9 hours so that we're getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep? Because I know we wake up some in the night and that kind of thing.
So we always recommend that you don't sit in bed and watch TV or read a book or whatever. Try to do that out at a different location. And then when you're ready to go to sleep, you go get in the bed and go to sleep. You dedicate yourself to being in that bedroom only when you're going to be sleeping.
Sleep. Okay. Gotcha. Thank you. So if you're listening and you've been following along with Small Steps for Better Health, you probably heard a previous episode where we talked about good sleep habits. But while we have a sleep expert here with us today, we're going to talk a little bit more about that before we dive into what our specific small step is this week. So talk to us a little bit about healthy sleep habits and good sleep hygiene and just in general what that looks like.
So, you know, the main way we should approach sleep is it's not the end of the day, but the beginning of the next.
Oh, yeah.
So we need to take care of that sleep. It's precious.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would recommend is trying to wind down within a couple of hours of bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make our sleep environment as conducive to sleep as we can.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the room needs to be dark and cool. It needs to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in an environment with lots of noise and ambient light, you mm-hmm. need to try to darken the room up the best you can mm-hmm. with dark shades. White noise machines can sometimes drown out noises from outside. So those are beneficial as well for people to use. Now, the other things that we recommend is avoid eating or drinking, especially a heavy meal within a couple of hours of bedtime. You need to exercise every day, but don't do it right before you go to sleep. That revs you up. So mm-hmm. within about 4 hours of bedtime, avoid any strenuous physical activity.
Okay.
So those are the things that we can do just to try to make our sleep as good a quality as we can get it.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that we do during the daytime that can be detrimental, you can take naps during the daytime, and even a 15-minute nap can mess your sleep up the next night. So you need to be very careful with nap times. Caffeine is another thing that we all commonly use, and we need to limit it to just using it in the morning.
Okay.
Try not to drink any caffeine after noon. Mm-hmm. I've got several patients that tell me they can drink a cup of coffee and go straight to bed. And I said, well, that may be true, but when we look at these people on sleep studies, you can see microarousals all through the night.
Okay.
So it's messing their sleep up,
right?
Even if they don't realize that that's what's going on.
Gotcha.
The other big one is us looking at our phones.
Right.
So we have a mechanism in our brain called the circadian rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells us when we are supposed to go to sleep and when we are supposed to be awake.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a active process, and it's triggered by light.
Okay.
So this is one of the mechanisms that tells our brain it's time to be awake.
Mm-hmm.
So the same wavelength of light that is coming out on your phone is the same wavelength of the sun that tells us it's time to be awake. So if you are looking at your phone or iPad or TV even, you are getting the wavelengths of the sun that tell your brain it's time to be awake. So again, avoidance of that within a couple of hours of bedtime is ideal.
Yes. So that's the big one we're here to talk about today, actually, is the avoiding screen time before bed. And I know just from personal experience, it's a hard habit to break.
It is.
It's like, you jump in the bed and start scrolling Instagram before you go to sleep. So tell us a little bit more about, I know you mentioned the circadian rhythm, but for those of us who might not have heard that term before, you know, I've heard it thrown around a little bit, but I don't really understand exactly what it is. So what is a circadian rhythm?
So circadian rhythm is our brain's mechanism of telling us what time to go to sleep, what time to be awake.
Okay.
This is what throws us off when we get jet lag.
Okay.
When you go off to another country and you can't sleep, or you are very sleepy during the daytime, it's because your circadian rhythm is not in tune with whatever time zone that you're in at that time.
Right.
So you get this buildup of a chemical in your brain, basically over the day,
mm-hmm.
that tells you that you're sleepy,
mm-hmm.
and you have to pay that off at some time. And again, when you go to sleep, that chemical starts to dissipate,
okay.
starts to go away. So we don't understand completely why we sleep,
mm-hmm.
but we do know that we have to have it.
Right.
And when we don't get it, bad things can happen.
Right.
I talked about a few things about depression and whatnot. There's also association with not getting enough sleep that causes high blood pressure, that causes your blood sugars to go up, that can cause some heart issues. So this is independent of any other
mm-hmm.
type of sleep disorder. It's just because people are not getting enough sleep. And we think that this is related to a pro-inflammatory state. In other
okay.
words, when your body is not adequately resting, you can't heal well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you end up having other significant medical issues.
Wow. So it really affects almost every aspect of our health if
Absolutely.
We're not getting good sleep.
Absolutely.
Interesting. And so, you know, it's looking at our phones or computer, tablet, whatever it might be, right before bed, especially in bed. You know, we know that, like you just mentioned, that light that it emits can kind of trick our brains into thinking that it's daytime because it's the same kind of light as the sun, but also just the content that you might be seeing as you scroll Instagram or as you scroll Facebook, it might, you know, make you mad or make you interested or whatever. So even just that can disrupt your sleep, I'm sure.
Well, absolutely. And the other thing I did not mention is they say do not surround yourself with anything that's associated with work or any stressful type of situation
right before you're going to sleep.
Correct. We all get very anxious when we get an email that concerns something we have to do the next day. So
right.
This is normal for us to do that. And that's, again, why it's a good idea to stay away from those kind of things within a couple of hours of bedtime.
Right. Is it a good idea to just not have your phone or your device in your bedroom at all, if you can? Or how should we approach that?
Well, that's kind of up to the individual.
Okay.
It depends on your ability to not look at that thing.
Right.
It's tempting to do so, and we all have our little apps on there, white noise app or whatever, mm-hmm. that sometimes can actually help us sleep.
Right.
One of the worst things I ever saw was a, it was a clock that projected the time on the wall.
Oh, wow.
In big, huge, bold letters in a person's bedroom while they were sleeping. Mm-hmm. That is a horrible thing to do.
Yeah.
So if you can avoid looking at your phone and looking to see what time it is all the time, that's, a lot of people will get upset that they can't sleep,
mm-hmm.
and they'll keep looking at the clock and it'll make them more upset.
Yes.
And they'll keep looking at the clock and it's just a buildup of more and more anxiety.
And you're doing the backwards math. Okay, if I go to sleep now, I can get 5 hours.
Right.
Okay, well, if I go to sleep now, I can get 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's making me more anxious.
And I tell folks to try to get up out of bed, you know, if they estimate they've been sitting there for, you know, 15, 30, 45 minutes or whatever, mm-hmm. try to get up, go to the den, read a book for 15 minutes or so, mm-hmm. and then try to go back and get in the bed.
Okay.
And see if they have any more luck that way. The thing you got to put into your brain, which is very difficult to do, I can't do it great myself mm-hmm. either, but you have to not be anxious about how much sleep you're getting.
Right.
And if you're only going to get 5 hours at night, well, you're only going to get 5 hours at night.
Sure.
You just have to try to not worry about it.
Right. Which is hard to do because we know how important
absolutely.
It is, but
absolutely.
But yeah, the anxiety can just make it worse.
Sure.
So let's talk about what people should do if they have tried some of these tips and tricks that we've talked about. You know, they're not looking at their screen before bed. They have implemented a good nighttime routine and good sleep hygiene, but they still are experiencing trouble sleeping or excessive daytime sleepiness. How do we know when we need professional help? When should we reach out to you?
Well, certainly anytime somebody is having a significant problem with this, they're welcome to come see us in clinic, mm-hmm. and we'll be happy to counsel them on these things.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend, particularly if people are snoring,
mm-hmm.
or they're having apneas, in other words, they're stopping their breathing when
right.
they're trying to sleep. If these things are occurring associated with daytime sleepiness, this is typically can be associated at least with sleep disordered breathing.
Okay.
So that is really when you want to come see us and get a sleep study done.
Okay.
With a sleep study, we will further evaluate how your breathing is doing and if it's affecting your sleep or not.
Okay.
When people have sleep apnea, they narrow the airway is mm-hmm. what ends up happening.
Mm-hmm.
When this occurs, you don't get enough air down in your lungs, your oxygen level starts to drop off, and your brain picks up on that pretty quickly and will wake you up very briefly, just for
right.
a few seconds. At that point, you fall right back to sleep, not even realizing that you did that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your spouse will see that, and sometimes at least, they will
right.
see that and recognize this is not normal.
Right.
And at that point, you definitely should come be seen by a sleep specialist
mm-hmm.
And have that checked out. There are numerous ways that we can treat these problems, and it could end up making a big difference in how you feel throughout the next day.
Gotcha.
Quality of life improves when we treat sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
Decrease in work accidents, decrease in car accidents, improvement in blood pressure, improvement mm-hmm. in blood sugars for your diabetic folks, and improvement in heart function.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things can be associated with treatment of sleep apnea.
Great. And so take us a little bit behind the scenes of a sleep study. If somebody has never had a sleep study, that might sound a little bit scary or uncertain because you don't know what that's going to look like. So what's a sleep study like?
So we have two different types of sleep studies. One is a home sleep study
mm-hmm.
That people can take home with them. And this
okay.
is there's a small belt that goes around the chest that holds a little computer module. There's a probe that goes on the finger, an oximeter probe. And there's a nasal cannula that goes in the nose, around the nose, and that picks up on the airflow. So people go to sleep with that. They wake up the next morning and they bring the machine back into us and we analyze the data and see what's going on. So that's the simplest way that we can do this.
I didn't know that was an option. That's interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That
I bet
is
people
an option.
Sleep a lot better doing it at home,
it is,
probably.
It is. Now, for people who do have heart trouble, for people who have any neurological issues, high blood pressure, anybody we think is going to have a severe sleep problem, mm-hmm. we typically want to do an in-house sleep study. We call that a PSG or polysomnogram. That is the in-depth study that we do. And this is coming to the sleep center. You have your own room, kind of like a hotel room, your own bed, your own bathroom. We do put multiple monitors on you. We can tell exactly when you go to sleep. We can tell exactly when you hit the deeper stages of sleep. And we can tell a lot more details if you're kicking your legs, if your heart is having arrhythmias on top of all the breathing, potential breathing issues.
So speaking of paying attention to what kind of things are happening in your sleep, what are your thoughts on some of the wearables that people wear, like the watches that people wear that track their sleep? Are those accurate at all? Is that something we should pay attention to?
There are some accuracy issues with those, with those things. When they usually can tell you if you're asleep or not. But when they start talking about stages of sleep and depth of sleep and those kind of things, the accuracy of those things are really not very good.
That's what I figured. I can't imagine how something on your wrist can tell if you're in REM sleep or not.
It can't. Now, the funny thing is with REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, that's when we're dreaming. Our brains are actually more active during REM sleep than they are when we're awake. That also happens to be when we have our worst sleep apnea problem. Now, when you go into REM sleep, your muscles are paralyzed. So we have a mechanism in our spinal cord that will paralyze our muscles so that we're not acting out our dreams. Now, every now and then you'll hear about somebody that where that mechanism is messed up and they end up giving their spouse a black eye or something like that in the middle of the night.
Or sleepwalking.
That's when that mechanism is not working properly. So the problem with having completely paralyzed muscles, except for our breathing muscles, of course, is when you have an airway that's barely being kept open properly and all of a sudden the muscles go paralyzed, that makes that sleep apnea much, much worse.
That makes sense. Well, anything else you want to cover on the topic of sleep habits or sleep studies or anything of that nature?
I would encourage people also, I don't think I hit on this, was having a dedicated go to bed time and a dedicated wake up time.
Yeah, that's important.
Those are pretty important things to do. Now, you went, you talked earlier about some insomnia issues, and what do you do if you if you're still having problems? We do something called sleep restriction. And what we will do is tell people, you know, okay, if you're normally going to bed at 10, waking up at 6, try going to bed at 11 or even midnight. And still waking up at 6. And as you start being able to fall asleep a little bit easier, then you can start backing it up slowly.
Just making your body sleepier so it's easier to fall asleep.
And once you get back in that habit of sleeping like you need to, you know, your body used to sleep really well. When you were a kid or a teenager or whatever, you knew how to sleep really well. And it's as an adult, as we've gotten these anxieties and these other issues that keep us awake, typically something that we're doing to ourselves. You just have to retrain your brain on how to go back to sleep.
Unlearn those habits.
There is a program out there called Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia. So we sometimes will direct people to that. And that basically goes over a lot of the sleep hygiene topics that I discussed, and they go over it in much more detail. Now, also, they will kind of train you to have your brain relax. So if you're one of those people that has a problem turning off the brain, so to speak, again, the cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia helps you to relearn how to turn that off. So there's several different websites on online that you can get into, and some of them are for a fee and some are not. But if you haven't tried that, I would recommend doing that.
So there's a lot of options for sleep trouble besides just sleeping medications. I know that's something that some people need, and it's great that it's an available option, but there's a lot of other treatment options too besides just that, right?
Correct.
That's great.
We typically do recommend, if these things don't work, maybe a trial of melatonin.
Okay.
Now, if you take melatonin, you need to take it about 2 hours before bedtime.
Oh, wow.
And anybody taking any other sleep aids, you know, some of the sleep aids are obviously very effective, or they wouldn't be out there.
Right.
But the body gets used to that over time. So let's say you're taking an Ambien or something like this. You really only need to be taking that medication for a couple of months.
Okay.
Let's say you had a stressful event happen in your life and you just need something to help you sleep. Ambien can be appropriate for that, but not long term.
Okay.
And, you know, any more than two or three months of Ambien, your body's going to get used to it. And then you're not going to be able to go to sleep at all without it.
Interesting.
So then we end up having to try to wean people off of that medication. And that can be difficult.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today and for sharing your time and expertise. Thank you to everyone who's listening. Just a reminder, we'll be rolling out a new Small Step for Better Health every 2 weeks. Please follow us on social media and sign up for our e-newsletter. All of those links will be in the podcast show notes. And just keep up with these Small Steps for Better Health. You can jump in at any time and take some small, sustainable actions toward improving your health. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great rest of your day.